Sped Homeschool Conversations. I want to thank our live guests, as well as those of you who are joining us on the recorded version of this broadcast, both on Facebook and on YouTube, as well as on our podcast. And my special guest tonight is Rita Savasco from Rooted in Language. Welcome, Rita.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you this evening?
Yes, thanks for inviting me.
We are so excited. So tonight we are going to talk about teaching strategies for deeper learning. And I know that's kind of foundational to the organization that you are involved in called Rooted in Language. And I thought we would get started just giving an introduction about what you do, how it got started, and just maybe a little bit of background about you and the passion that you have to help parents who are teaching.
Well, I am a speech and language pathologist, and I've been practicing since 1984. So I've been doing this for quite a few decades now. And I have my own private practice in Ohio. And I work primarily, my specialty is working with children who have dyslexia and dysgraphia and language-based reading and writing difficulties. Mm-hmm. And A few years ago, my colleague and I, Tracy Molitors, we connected and wrote a book together that kind of ended up launching. It's called Trees in the Forest, and that mm-hmm. ended up launching our online business. And I want to say that I actually decided to do that because people were coming to me and asking if I would make myself available online to consult with them and help them with their students in the homeschool and population. And I had homeschooled for 5 years. I have three adult children. Mm-hmm. Ranging in age from 22 tomorrow up to 28 this mm-hmm. month as well. I have two September birthdays. So 22 to 28 are my three kids. And I decided to go ahead and kind of respond to that call mm-hmm. and started Rooted in Language because I believe that so much of learning and especially reading and writing, which is so central to our education, is rooted in our language system. And so many needs that kids have can be addressed and need to be looked at with this perspective of the entire language system. So that's really how things got started. We were talking that my goal is all parent training. So in my private practice, parents sit right at the table. I know they're the ones doing all the hard work. And so I always have set up my practice so that I was teaching parents what they need to do and answering their questions and taking their ideas. And so that is kind of the heart of Rooted in Language is our parent training program.
Mm-hmm. And that's at rootedinlanguage.com is where people can find kind of all your resources. And I know the book that you talked about, Trees in the Forest, can be found on Amazon as well.
Yes, it's on Amazon and a PDF version we sell on our website. And so when we started this, we started our parent training classes and parents, and I had written the book, and if you've seen the book, I don't know if you have, but the book has five primary reading and writing ideas. It's focused on reading comprehension, but it involves writing and what I call bits and pieces of writing. And so parents began to ask us if, you know, well, do you have that material? You know, do you have something like that? You show how you do this. Are you going to make that for us? So that's has really kind of launched this other side. So we have our online classes. That's really educator training. Teachers and parents, home educators and traditional educators are welcome. And then we also have some materials that we use that support. They're mostly supportive materials, not whole curriculum, but supportive materials. Because I'm really much more about you know, how I teach more than what exactly is being taught. So,
right. I read somewhere in one of the things you wrote that learning happens best in relationships. I had to write that down because that is so true, that when we connect with another person, that learning goes deeper. Mm-hmm. And
we know that about babies. We know that about babies. We always talk about that. We know that babies that don't have relationship don't learn. They don't thrive, right? Mm-hmm. They will actually be delayed by that lack of relationship in their development. Their development will be delayed. And yet we kind of forget about that, you know, as kids enter an environment. And it doesn't mean that they can't have good relationships in a lot of different school environments. I mean, I think there are a lot of families now. Some are all homeschool. Some have kind of a mix. Some kids are in and out of traditional schools. They may be doing private school kinds of situations or, you know, I did a combination. My kids were homeschooled for a while and then went into high school. And I had a child that I really didn't homeschool much. And, you know, I think that no matter what our relationship, and we know this too with all the research, right? The kids who are having family dinners, the kids whose parents, you know, follow their education practices. These are the kids that are thriving. So it does happen in relationship. And we need to remember that, though, about everything we do, especially the things we're a little afraid of, because we get very hands-off with what we don't want to teach.
That
right?
is so true. I mean, I have to admit, I did the same thing with writing. It's like, oh, please just do that on your own. Because I am not equipped. I can teach you all the math I can teach you, but boy, I struggle with writing too. And so, yeah.
It is interesting. When I was homeschooling, I thought to myself, you know, the one thing I wanted, my fear, I wasn't afraid of language arts, obviously, but my fear was I wanted my kids to have passionate teachers. And I knew there were a few things I wasn't super passionate about. So I didn't feel very competent. I wasn't competent in music and I didn't feel very competent about art. So I wasn't passionate because of my own sense of, ineptitude. So, and then it turned out, as much as I love math, I wasn't super passionate about teaching math. So I really looked for those outside resources who were passionate. And that's one of the ways that Tracy and I first started working together. She was my children's art teacher all through their homeschool. So, and she's very passionate.
She did a lot of illustrations for your book and another.
She does watercolor, right?
It's fun to find someone who compliments you. And I think our kids, when they find a friend like that too, you know, to be able to build off of that.
Well, and I think we see that when we join up with families, you know, that smaller group that we do things with, that the kind of learning that can happen in those environments, and not only parent to child, but someone else's parent to my child, you know, was so powerful for me.
Yeah.
And I like to think with my students that I have that kind of relationship. And I believe now with working with parents that I'm trying to really support them and their learning and their relationship as going forward, you know, as I'm teaching them. And I think that matters. You know, they have to trust me. Mm-hmm. They have to know I care, and I do. And they have to know that it's not fake praise. I really am encouraging them. This is hard work.
Yeah. And you understand that. And I think that comes across when you really know the subject, but also you know the struggle. And we have to, as educators, even with our children, as well as adults that we're mentoring, show that, you know, we're not perfect either. And I think that goes absolutely. A long way.
Absolutely. There are so many stories to tell.
Oh, yes.
We don't like to start there. I will eventually tell them. I hate to start there. I think it's particularly difficult when you have a struggling learner. And, you know, kids can struggle for a lot of different reasons. they can struggle because of their attention issues or because of language delays or because of dyslexia and reading difficulties. Mm-hmm. They can struggle because they have, coordination difficulties. They can struggle because they have dysgraphia, which may not be at all related to the coordination we're seeing. And, emotional regulation, that can be a very difficult thing for a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. And kids who struggle way also have a more difficult time regulating their emotions because dealing with the struggle is huge for them. So right. I think when I talk to parents and they have kids who struggle, you just doubt yourself all the time. Mm-hmm. It's hard. And I think it's really helpful to have someone say, look, I've done this. I've seen this issue and keep persevering this and let's do a little less of that. I think that helps.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I can't tell you working over a decade as a consultant that, the one time that if I would share my story, all of a sudden you could just hear the parent's sigh of relief saying, oh, you've been through this. Mm-hmm. You're so not just true. Someone on the other side of the phone saying, this is some good advice I have to give you. No, I'm on my 17th year. And my oldest was diagnosed with high functioning autism. And the fact that he is even in college astounds me. because that was not a place I ever saw him going. We struggled a lot and it's by God's grace, but we are where we are.
Right. Right. So. And it's tough and there are no easy answers, but there are some principles to follow, which I think is a little bit what we're talking about today is there are some general principles. They're not just, things that I think, although I do. I also, look for the research that, I'm drawn to the research that kind of supports my ideals, of course, because that's the kind of information I'm reading. But it is interesting when, as an early therapist, I would do a few things and I would think, I feel like I'm kind of help organizing like this student's, I feel like I'm helping organize their brain and I'm helping them organize their language system. And no one's really talking about that, but is that happening? Now we're talking about it more, technology has changed so much. We know more about what's happening in learning.
There has been a huge shift even in the homeschooling community. I know because having been involved as long as I have and you too, it was all curriculum. And now we're seeing parents going, how do we get to the root first?
Yes.
Before we start putting in the curriculum, because it's like beating our head against the wall or we're switching from one curriculum to another. And we've got them. I have one parent call me and she said, I've got them all on my shelf. Which one do I use? Yes, or which one haven't I bought and that's going to work? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's probably you can use stuff already on your shelf, but you've got to take a step back.
Yeah, you have to really, and I hope I'm helping to do this, develop a philosophy about what you really believe about learning. And there are good ideas out there. And, hopefully we're going to talk about a few of them. And then you can start to apply information to that. And it's so important to, I always say it's a process, not the program. And it really is about the learning process. And also, just because a child struggles with the material doesn't mean it's the wrong one either. Right. So I think that's the other part we have to be comfortable with is how can we support our kids, but still let them be challenged, still know this is learning. That's why it's called learning. Right now, not like,
when you start.
I'm not saying they need to be on a treadmill, but we do want to realize that, not everything is as Pollyanna as we want it to be. Mm-hmm. And especially for a struggling learner. And some things we just really need to persevere in. So, and I think if you are developing more of a philosophy, you can feel more comfortable with that.
With that I just want to let those who are watching live that we are taking questions. So if you want to put them in the feed, we will be able to see them, hopefully. I will make sure on my other computer that they are coming through. We've had issues in the past where they don't. So I will make sure to check both computers to make sure that we get those through. But so Rita, you were talking about general principles. Can you get us started on that?
Yeah.
What are the foundational general principles for learning that we should be focusing on?
You know, some of them are my little pithy sayings, and some of them, you know, are things that I'm going to share that, you know, and they do coincide. But one of the things that we had stated that we were going to talk about is, what is deep learning? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, there's kind of this surface learning where I think we have some familiarity with that. And I think when we're home educators, we have more opportunity for deep learning because but that doesn't mean we do. It just means we have some good opportunities for it. But, you know, I think in the classroom, a lot of deep learning can happen there depending on how things are organized. So, you know, an example of surface learning would be, you know, a parent will say to me, well, you know, we do our spelling, every week we do our spelling, but then I never see it in my child's writing. Like, they'll pass all our spelling tests, but they're not really getting it in their writing. I think that's, you know, a very common thing. All of us have experienced. I was a weak speller growing up, and I could pass all my spelling tests. That was not the issue. How I needed to approach learning for spelling so that it really was deep learning and I was really making connections, that's something different. So surface learning, you can pass, you can say, yeah, check, I checked the box, move on, I don't remember it, I'm not connected to that material at all, and it hasn't changed me in any way. Right? Mm-hmm. Kind of the definition of deep learning is, I'm seeing connections between what I already know and these new ideas I'm learning. And I'm making those connections. So, and I'm applying it. Yes. It feels real to me. It feels relevant. Some things are hard to help kids make relevant, but I think there are some cool ways to do it. And it is, I'm engaged. That's another thing that's needed. You know, I'm engaged. And I would also say that in order to make these connections and build these concepts in a way that's deep, we have to use our language skills. And that sounds silly, but, you know, I don't know about you, but I have experienced reading to my children while also thinking about what I was going to make for dinner. And I couldn't tell you one single thing I read at the end of it. Uh-huh. Like, we are all capable of getting in this kind of mode where we're just going through the motions, but we really are not engaged and we really haven't connected our language system. And this is important. And how, what's one way to do that? Well, we actually have output. That's an important part of connection is, and we go back to learning happens in relationship, right?
Right.
If I'm in a room talking to myself, that can be helpful. I used to study for tests that way. I would pretend I was teaching and I would say everything I knew about a subject. And then I would realize, I can't repeat that. I don't know what that part is. And I'd go back and study that more. Okay. So, so there can be some value in that. But output, input is conversation. And writing becomes a major important piece of output in our learning. And frankly, we just need to be doing a lot of it. And I think what's scary about writing is, as you say, is like somehow there has to be this great paper at the end, right? Well, that's not what. That's only a little bit of what writing is. Writing can be this way that we get things down, look at it, make connections, right?
Exactly.
And that's one of the reasons I talk about these bits and pieces of writing, embracing these bits and pieces of writing, because bits and pieces of writing can be part of the process of learning. I see this and I'm kind of starting to map this out, and I write here and I write here. And now I'm kind of drawing things and now I'm saying to you, hey, does this go with this? I'm thinking, and you're like, I don't know. Let's look at it. You know, that right. kind of engagement is really what deep learning looks like. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have to be a little careful about the curriculum, right?
Right. Because if it's just a curriculum that says, you know, here's, you know, this, get to the end product, you know, mm-hmm. and you're not doing the process in the middle, then you're
not doing the process. Also, a curriculum can make you feel like there's only one right answer. Right. Mm-hmm. If I'm filling in blanks, there's one right answer there. And all I do is think, oh, I got to find this answer. And now I got to find that one. And mm-hmm. how many more do I have to go? And how many pages of this, right? That's a whole different experience than when, say, I'm writing down notes about what I hear and translating it in my own words. That is a much, much different process. And I'm really networking information in a different way when I'm mm-hmm. engaged in that. Right. So I think deep learning can be a lot of different hands-on kinds of learning. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always have to involve writing, but I would argue that we need to be doing a lot more of it, and we need to value those little bits of writing as part of that. Right.
Right. Because the more experience your student gets, whether it's a long piece or a short piece, you're still building those experiences, and they add up to, you know, the more you do something, the better you get at it. And right. it doesn't have to be a lot of it at a time to get better at it.
Right. And, you know, that kind of leads us to another important principle is mm-hmm. we really have to embrace that we do need some foundational skills. We need some skills so that then, and we have to work on those skills, and we have to do it again and again, mm-hmm. because we need a lot of our underlying skills to get to this automatic level.
Hmm.
So I Perfect. Cannot be thinking about letter formation if I'm writing a paper. I have mm-hmm. to have letter mm-hmm. formation completely solid. That yeah. has to be on autopilot in order for me to get to this higher level thinking. Right.
Yes.
So, yes, we do need to work on handwriting. You know, it's interesting. There's a professor at Vanderbilt, Stephen Graham, who wrote about looking at kids who struggle with handwriting. They write less. Mm-hmm. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised by that. Right.
Right.
There's a saying, mm-hmm. the rich get richer, the poor get poorer when it comes mm-hmm. to reading and writing. Mm-hmm. If writing is easier for me, I'm going to do more of it. The more I do of it, the more my skills grow, and I just get richer and richer and richer.
Oh, exactly.
The struggling writer is not going to write very much.
Mm-hmm.
As a parent, I might be like, oh, writing's really hard for them, so I only make them do this much a day, you know, and I'm managing now. I'm really managing and limiting, and I'm not saying that there's not a place for some of that.
Right.
I'm just saying that this tendency is like, that's really hard.
And so
we're going to do a lot mm-hmm. less. And we need to really know in our heart that now we have helped with this situation, sadly, where the poor is getting poorer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to really know in our hearts, we need to be reading aloud when reading's hard, and we need to practice it more. Not less. And we need to be fitting writing. Okay, maybe the big paper is hard, mm-hmm. but we need to be fitting this in more places. We right. need to keep working on handwriting if handwriting's
mm-hmm.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, can I make that more meaningful? Hopefully.
Right. Yeah.
But
apply it to something that their brain wants to engage with. So
exactly.
the issue of writing isn't as cumbersome because, it's something that I want to write about. So, or that I love to
at least care about on every other arena except writing.
Exactly.
Right?
Now,
so it may be that, you know, I'm really into cars and I am going to collect all my favorite cars and I'm going to chart, you know, the details about mm-hmm. these and mm-hmm. make a comparative chart, right? So I might be, so I'm less overwhelmed. I only have to do a car a day or something, mm-hmm. which means I only have to fill 8 boxes or something. And maybe I write a summary sentence on this car, or I give it a 5-star rating or whatever and say why, whatever it is, but I am engaging in that. And that's true of reading too. So that's why I said you want parents to have the confidence to persevere.
Yeah, and I think having support with other parents, knowing you're not alone, is crucial because we think that we're the only one having the battle with our child.
Yes, it's true. Or you get the opposite, this kind of well-meaning thing, you know, of, well, just give them time. They'll do it when they're ready. You know, my child didn't do that, or I had a neighbor whose child, you know, never read till they were 13. And then now, you know, they're at Harvard and they're amazing. And, you know, what I think about that is you are basing a lot on one kid out there, someone's story. And you have no idea if they're anything like your child. You have no idea if their set of assets and strengths and weaknesses.
And you don't hear the whole story either, because like my oldest didn't read till he was 11, but he went to college level the next year. It doesn't mean I wasn't teaching him reading every day.
Yeah, exactly. There's that too.
But it just took a while for that jump to happen. And the writing happened the same way. I taught him writing every single year. He wrote the most for me. His last year of high school was one email, and now he's getting A's in college. But it doesn't mean I didn't teach him writing every day we homeschool.
Exactly. And I think that's so important, because also you said he's on the spectrum. Is that their child who's on the spectrum? Yeah. And that kind of pattern is a little more typical. And had you not persevered, would he be?
No,
and also
skills, you know, they somehow got buried in there somewhere, and they came out when they needed to.
Right. But that doesn't mean that this other person's child is on the spectrum and they're going to follow that same pattern, right?
Exactly.
They could have dyslexia or dysgraphia, and that needs to be dealt with in a whole different way. So it's really, really important, I think, to believe, okay, there are certain things that need to be automatic, and I always liken it to driving. I cannot be driving. I can't be an effective driver if I am still focused on all the effort it takes to keep my car between two lines.
Exactly.
That information has to be automatic, right? Yep. And if you ever had a new driver, you know, that is like a harrowing experience.
It definitely is. I'm
how to turn the wheel and how many times to turn the wheel and how your hands move and you're like, I hit the mailboxes. You know, all those things. We have to have this bank of foundational skills. And, you know, so that we can, those skills become so automatic that we can move to these higher level skills. So we want deep learning. We want to be connecting. We want to know that some struggle is good, right? We want to be hands-on. We want kids engaged. We want conversation. We want writing. We also know that in the midst of all that, we have these foundational skills that need to be built up. And that may look different than this super engaged, you know, very concept driven learning. That foundational work, now this is this other piece that may look more routine.
Yes.
Right?
The just going through the motions.
Yeah. Like swim and laps.
Today we had a very nice long talk about why she needed to learn to type this year. And I didn't care how long it was going to take her every day to get there, because it was a foundational skill she needed to have.
Right. And we know that. You know, we know that if you're not hunting and pecking and looking for numbers and letters, you are going to be able to create more. Right. So we have that understanding with certain things, you know. What was it I was just reading? They were talking about, Corey Stamper in her book, Word by Word, was talking about the pro basketball player who stands at the foul line and makes that shot, and how they make that shot and they make that shot and they make that shot. And that represents thousands of hours.
Exactly.
Of standing at that line, so that when the pressure's on, they can make the shot. And I think that these are things that we have to really believe in our hearts, you know, and that's part of what I'm trying to help parents embrace.
That's a very good point. And our kids know when we don't believe it, and they can read between the lines. So it's important for us to believe it before we start telling them that they have to believe it.
Yeah, right. Right. And, you know, I think, sometimes I will make comparisons, you know, I mean, they can feel angry at us for those things, you know, and I think that's hard. I think it's never fun to be in that situation where our kids feel angry over what they're having to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would say to my kids, you know, if you couldn't walk, do you think I would say, never mind, you don't have to do your exercises, even though it might help you walk someday? Like, don't you think I would be saying, yeah, this matters, this counts, you know? And I think there's a lot of things like that that we just have the insight into they don't have. And you know, we do have to believe it, but it's hard if you have a child who's really pushing back at you.
Right. Yeah. So as far as foundational skills for writing, what would you say are the top ones that parents really need to focus on?
Well, we need to get some handwriting to really flow, you know, and for some children, they will always struggle with that. But we need to get the handwriting as strong as we can get it. And 9 times out of 10, that the best choice is cursive. There's less lifting of the pencil. The words are held together differently. It's just an easier way to get flow and speed. And I think in this day and age, it makes sense to make sure kids learn how to type, as you said, to keyboard, whatever we want to call it. Now I'm dating myself.
I still use the old books. I think they work better than programs.
Yeah, so do I. I don't like the programs either. I'm a flip the page. And I find kids generally are like, yeah, okay, I can see the page. Is this all I have to do? Right? Right. And I'll do it. And then I know I can flip ahead and I can see what's coming. And now I have a sense of what I'm going to learn. I just think the books work better for that.
They do. I tried the games and all my son wanted to do was win it, you know, and you don't win typing. You learn typing. Yeah, right. And I think that's a whole different philosophy our kids take too of learning is, you know, they rush through because that's how we handle so many other things in our day-to-day lives is if I can just get to the finish line, then I'm done. It's not the long process of learning, kind of like what you're talking about.
You know, it's interesting you say that because Marianne Wolf wrote an article about that. The Guardian had it. Skim reading is the new normal. The effect on society is profound. Marianne Wolf has done a lot of research in dyslexia. And so she's talking about how we have this generation now. I mean, and you know, this is important for us to make an important distinction is we're looking at our kids, you know, and I'm saying my kids read, you know, off on, they read digital material all the time and they're doing fine, but they weren't sitting in car seats with, you know, iPads on their lap. Like there is a different generation and the way they learn to read, and schools are shifting away from books and everything is digital now. All my students who are in traditional school and in private Catholic schools are coming to me and they no longer have textbooks in hand ever. Everything is read digitally. And there's research that kids, you know, our brains will do what our brains have to do. And digital material is kind of best managed by skimming. Yeah, and there's actually these eye patterns people follow and we skim. And it is, they're finding the research. There is not the slow processing, you know, bringing close reading to the task. I'm not empathizing. I'm not analyzing, you know, all those things that don't happen when we skim. And we know that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm going to talk to you about some of these ideas, I don't skim that material, right? Mm-hmm. I really read something I know I'm going to have to present on. And it kind of leads us back to this idea I was talking about. Like, if I really want to encourage deep learning, then output matters, right? Because if I need to teach you or I need to talk about it, now I am going to have to engage with that material in a deeper way. Right. And, you know, this is important. So yeah, we have things out there that are encouraging this kind of surface fast learning. And then we have some other ideas that are slowing things down. But we need to slow down our pace too. We can't run our kids through a crazy schedule all day with 25 workbooks to fill out. I mean, I did that with my kids. You know, I'd be like, oh, we'll do this and this and this and this and this. And then it was like, oh my gosh.
Overload.
Yeah, this is overload, right? And sometimes I would even say, I know it's not that valuable, but I just want you to finish. I actually said those words. I just want you to finish this chapter. I know it's stupid and it isn't worth anything, but I just feel this compulsion. I paid for that book and I would really like you to fill those pages. And, you know, after that's like coming out of my mouth, I'm going, I don't even believe that. Like, why am I doing this? You know, but we want those books. We want to see them filled.
Yeah. You know, it's so very true about the digital. I tried going to, you know, digital books that, and I wanted to be able to take quotes out of it for using with my team. And I found physically, I can't do it. I needed the actual copy to be able to write on the book and to interact with it because I couldn't slow myself down enough to get the snippets out of it that I really needed, no matter how hard I tried. And so if I'm, you know, as our viewers are watching and saying, you know, I've been giving my kids these books, but they're not telling me what they're reading. They don't comprehend it. You know, listen to what Rita has to say about that because it is so true.
Yes. And I think something interesting that is Marianne Wolfe talks about is we have like a spatial relationship with books too. Like we don't think about that, but we actually, I mean, and you can picture this when you really think about it. Like I'll think, oh, I want to go back and look at that. I know generally, usually, is it in the first half or the second half? Maybe even is it in the first third, middle third, last third, right? I'll think, oh, it was on the left side. Right. Oh, it was near the top. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was at the end of a paragraph. Like we have this, these physical markers that we rely on and they're taken from us. And I read digitally too. I find I'll read an article. But then if I think I really want this article and I want to make notes on this article and I want to connect with this information, then I print it off.
Yeah.
I feel bad. It feels like a waste of paper. What if I just store it in Evernote? I mean, I have Evernote and I store things in Evernote, but I'm still printing them off because I know that to get to that deeper level, that's what I need to do. You know, they talk about a way for deep learning is you want to activate this engagement. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about, this kind of goes back to your question. I'm trying to lead us back to the question of some of the foundational skills. You know, it's really important foundationally. Actually, spelling matters. We realize kids not only become better writers when you work on it, but also it improves their reading skills. Like it's really good to work on reading and writing simultaneously, even though they'll progress at different rates. And when you work on spelling and it matters, and you're really we try to teach it in a way that's very, you know, hands on. We're bringing in all primary areas of the language system that we know are important that you have to coordinate. Mm-hmm. We teach that in our classes, but we also talk about having this LA binder, we call it, and we have this whole class on what all do we put in an LA binder. And, you know, basically we want kids, you know, we don't want this situation where things are kind of lost in space, right? You know, you learned about this and we are going to create a place for it and it is going to be a reference for you. And it is proof that you learned it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay that you have to go back and look at it. We all do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is what learning looks like. Mm-hmm. And you own it, not me.
That's a great study skill too.
You have to find it. Yes.
To learn.
Right. Right. So we want, as we teach a concept, in this case, the LA Binder kind of houses what the LA Binder houses is some of the concepts we learn in phonics, some of the concepts we learn in spelling, some of the concepts we learn in word study, what we call word study. And it may also house what are literary elements and, you know, what are some key vocabulary that we need, that we're working on, and what are our editing strategies. Like, everything's kind of there. And part of what we want kids to see is, guess what? All this fits together. This isn't that you did this and now you did this. We want networking.
Right.
That's deep learning.
It gets so segmented when we call it different subjects, and yet it's all used for the same purpose together. And so it makes a lot of sense to have it all in one place for them.
Right.
We do have one question. It's not coming up on here, and so I'm glad I've got my other computer on.
Okay. Isn't that interesting?
I know. And I was waiting to see maybe if it came up because the other comments did. But Danielle wanted to know, I didn't know there was a typing book, she said. What book do you use? So where did you find yours? Because I know I found mine at the library. It was on like the books they were getting rid of, and I think I paid $1 for mine.
Yes.
And I've used it with all my children. You could probably find it on Amazon.
Yes, on Amazon is where I got mine. And I'm hoping if Claire's on, she remembers which one we always use. And honestly, it isn't even like I think it's the greatest one in the world. It's just the one I used.
Whatever the high school
used. Dr. Fry or Fry, F-R-Y, I'm thinking that is the name. I don't know if Claire can put it up for me if she knows. But and if I don't know if Maura's on, maybe she can do it. But I can always add that if you would like. I'll find the one that I use from Amazon. But it was the same thing. It wasn't very expensive. At the time, I was at Barnes & Noble, and I had just looked at a couple of them, and it propped up and it flipped. That's what I wanted, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, if they stand up on their own, that's even better.
And one year, I went on and I read some reviews, and I thought, oh, I'm going to buy a couple different ones and see if I like them. And the pages were too full. It was crazy. Okay. You know, that wasn't good. But if you took typing, let's kind of go back to that a little bit about the foundational information. So if when you were younger and you took typing, I don't know how many of you took a typing class. I did, you know.
Okay, yeah, I'm right. Enough for that too.
Right. You know, so you start out and you're doing your AS, 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 right? You know, and you're learning all your keys. And then you start some sentences with those few keys, right? And then you learn some more keys, and now you have more words you can add. Right. And then you finally have learned enough keys, you start doing sentences and paragraphs, and then you work your way up to copying these pages, right? Well, we should be really approaching writing very much like that. I've learned a few sounds. I learned my first three sounds. I made my first word. I wrote my first word. I copied my first word. I know 10 sounds. I can copy all these words. I can spell these words using my sounds. And I can invent silly words using these sounds, right? Now I can make short sentences. Now I know some keywords I need for sentences. Now I can write some paragraphs. Not everything's spelled right. It's not all perfect. We're getting there. You know, it's okay. I think for a while in education, I remember this clearly in the late 80s. I was in Washington, D.C. at the time working for a private practice in the D.C. area. And a lot of the private schools had really embraced invented spelling. And they also had embraced free, you know, some free writing. And then, you know, 10 years later, nobody liked invented spelling and nobody liked free writing. And I thought, why? You know, I like it when brand new readers are trying to create sentences. Why did we suddenly not like that? Well, I think the reason is because there's another thing we never taught. We never taught editing. We never taught, hey, you know, you copied that sentence and that was really awesome. Let's go through our list, our little checklist here. What do sentences need to do? Oh, they need to start with capitals. Did we do that? right? Mm-hmm. If all we do is just you're free, you're free, you're free, you're free, it's all like nice and relational.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, we need to have some things in place for learning these basic editing skills. So that's foundational, mm-hmm. but it's a lot more handholding. So I need to rest in that. If let's go back to the typing example, it ended up being a good one, right? Mm. I'm not going to hold you accountable for knowing where the U is if you've only learned the main key band, right?
Right.
I'm not going to hold you accountable till you know that. So until you've had a lot of experience with it, until you've practiced it and you've been allowed to make errors. So I'm not going to hold you accountable, you know, for, the perfectly organized paper when you still are working on, you know, how to kind of get ideas down. I'm not going to hold you accountable for knowing where all your commas go, your participle phrases. If we've never even worked on that, we don't even have anything to reference, right?
Right.
So I'll help you with that, but I am going to hold you accountable for periods at the end.
So it's almost like a plateau rising, you know, of accountability. And yet flexibility. And for a parent to be able to understand, this is where we're still flexible. This is where we are held accountable. And almost, you know, to articulate that to your child every time you make a move in that area. Okay, we have mastered this. Now this is something that we're going to add to the accountability side.
Yes, right. And, you know, by accountable, I don't mean, you know, rulers across the knuckles, you know.
No.
Can you tell I was raised in the 60s? and in Catholic schools. But but what I would do with my kids is I would say, okay, so we're going to do editing. We're going to, you know, pick some of this free writing, whatever. We're going to do some editing. We would decide together because, you know, I did feel like some of their writing was personal. Some of it they just loved maybe and didn't want to touch. That's okay. Yeah. But we were, you know, something was going to get edited because we have our editing time. And I would say, okay, so here's your little checklist, perhaps. And you edit and then we'll sit down together and we'll edit together. And so we'd sit down together and I'd say, okay, so start reading because listening is one of your best editing tools, right? And I'd say, and you have a pencil, you can fix anything you want as you go. Oh, I left out a word, right? And so we'd start reading and I'd say, okay. And a lot of times my kids would go, wait a minute, is that supposed to have a comma there? And guess what? Is that what? Because it was safe. You could be wrong. You could be right. It was okay. You were just learning. I have editors. You have editors. Everybody has an editor, right? You know, we always get an editor who knows more than we know. That's what we need,
I think,
right?
I have 50 marks on my blog.
Exactly.
That's coming on
exactly. I mean, it's appalling, actually, when you look at your own writing,
I know.
By the way. you know, and you've kind of given them permission. Your errors are good. Errors are what we learn from. And then say they do know that's a participle phrase and we need a comma before that participle phrase. Then I might say, can you tell what that is? Do you remember that? Right. Or is that a participle? You know, oh, that needs a comma, doesn't it? Like I'm giving a lot of opportunity for them to be successful in editing.
Yes,
and if they don't know that, I'll say, you know what? We haven't learned this yet, but this one actually needs a comma and we will learn it and you'll know later why. So I think if we, again, kind of embrace this, we're engaged, it's relational, there's room for growth, it's a process, but we're not going to skip it. We're not going to avoid it.
Yeah. You know, I read another, quote that you had, and I don't remember where I found it, and it was either on your website or reading the preliminary part of your book on Amazon, but you said, not all children struggle with learning, but all children struggle with writing. I think that that's so relieving to know that this is an area, and I know I had interviewed somebody a while ago, too. We were talking about reading comprehension and things like that, and just how difficult reading and writing is as a process. It's not as simple as, because there's no one right way to integrate into a person's life, how to get their ideas out and how to, I mean, there are the mechanics, the foundations, like you talked about, but we're each unique and we each write uniquely because of our perspective on the world. And to be able to teach someone the mechanics, but yet the freedom.
Right. There's so much you have to coordinate. One researcher said it's the coup de grace of the entire language system. Writing is the coup de grace of the language system. Like, it really requires everything. All systems go. And it is, and it's important to realize, and I don't know if on the website you saw, I have a language tree that's Tracy helped illustrate this metaphor of how we have these kind of root information that we need to know. And that information is used in different ways in the four trunks of the tree, which is listening, speaking, reading, and writing. And I've had parents say to me, I'm still stuck on the fact that reading and writing goes with listening, speaking. Like we can really separate things out. We forget that, you know, hey, this is learning that happens on top of a system that's already wired to do a different task. Right. So we are wired for listening and speaking as long as we don't have any, you know, acuity kinds of deficits, right? We're wired to get stimulation and we develop language. And we're speaking and we're listening. And some kids, their wiring is not as strong and they have language delays, and they can have listening difficulties and they can have speaking difficulties, but they can be fine. But then they learn these new skills, and those skills hijack those same systems, but use them at a different level. And so reading comprehension is kind of our visual way of comprehending, you know, this in this new way, as as opposed to listening. And writing is like speaking, but those processes demand, they not only use our system, but they demand so much more.
Exactly.
And they need everything to be coordinated, and they need lots of speed. And you know, it's a whole, it needs lots of space and lots of time. But what we don't want to do is A, fear it and avoid it, even if it's hard. Or, you know, I mean, I know I once subbed at a local high school here, and I was going into one of the classrooms for the more severely impaired kids. And there was a girl there who had some ability to write, and she had a word board, and she would every day have to create a sentence using words from her word wall, right? And so for a week, I watched her every day write basically the same sentence. And I thought, okay, can she learn a little bit of phonics? Can she do invented spelling? So by the end of my 7 weeks with her, she was beginning, and she was kind of afraid at first, you know, like, what? I know this, and I know that's all spelled right in there, and this has been okay. Why are you doing this, you know? But she started to create spontaneous sentences that weren't perfectly spelled, but they were her thoughts. She wasn't limited by that wall of words, and she wasn't just playing it safe every day. Right. So I think, you know, we have to really, and she had a wonderful teacher who just, like, as soon as we started doing it, was so excited and went with it, you know. But we want to challenge. If you're here, can I help you get here? And and you know yourself with your son, you may have had times where you thought, we're not, like you said, are we going to go to college? Like, you have to keep going to that next level. You know, I've had people who've come to me and they've said that this certain professional told me that if I hadn't learned this by now, I never will. And I'm like, I just totally refuse to accept that.
Exactly.
We're learning so much more about the brain. And one of the things we're learning is that it keeps learning.
It keeps learning. Definitely. Yeah. Don't ever give your child a stopping place. Because they will surprise you if you, you just keep moving along.
Definitely. So we want to have that challenge, right? We want to keep that high.
Yep. So we have a question also that didn't show up on there, but I've got it on my other computer. It says, how many hours a day do you spend on deep learning a day for like a child in junior high? Do you give it a time or?
Well, I think when things are deep, they need time. So, you know, I may engage if we were writing a paper. For example, let's take a few things. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So if we were writing a paper, we may spend a month on a paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only drafts and, you know, maybe doing some reading and then coming back to it and deciding what goes together and rewriting and editing. So we could spend, what I would love to have now, when I see students who are in traditional school, they're like, yeah, I have this big paper due tomorrow. Can you help me? Like, well, we'll do the best we can, right?
Exactly.
If we were studying poetry and I want comparing poems, you know, we would be, for that month, we would be reading poems, doing journaling about the poems, mm-hmm. you know, what are my insights on the poems? Maybe we'll start to organize them according to like writers or topics or whatever. We're going to mm-hmm. start thinking about how do we want to write about this? And maybe in the end, we took three poems that were all on the same topic and we're comparing them, but we've already done some deep analysis on the writer's style and what were some of the literary elements there. Mm-hmm. Do I like it? What does it say to me? You know, all these things, mm-hmm. right? So there's been a lot happening there all week. You know, if it's history and history, a lot of times when I would set up a deep learning project with history, it would be ongoing for months. Mm-hmm. So we might have, you know, kind of a catalog we were creating of these different events in history and how they were all fitting together. Or we would have written narrations that would be ongoing. And then in the end, that would be kind of this cumulative project, or we would be charting things and graphing things and, you know, starting to put some things together, you know, to make it richer and more personal. And we might be sharing it, and we might be creating a PowerPoint, and we might be, writing stories, you know, so what I try to do is I try to think once a month, what's going to be the big thing for this month. We had some math projects that, frankly, I stole directly from my friend who's a math teacher who always had kind of interesting projects, you know. And so one of, you know, and I think math, to me, it's hard for me to always make math as rich and meaningful because it isn't my it's not my strong suit. So I would try to find good ideas from other people. Mm-hmm. And also my husband loves math. So he ended up teaching math because he'd be like, isn't math great? Isn't it just the best?
It's a very wise decision.
Yeah, where I'd be going, yeah, let's try to get through this, you know? But he did a lot of foundational things with them, back to the foundations, like mm-hmm. everyone had to set things up. He's an engineer, right? But yeah. But it makes a difference. If things are lined up, you're not going to make as many mistakes. Mm-hmm. If you write down mm-hmm. all your facts before you get started, you're not going to make as many mistakes. If you do the problem backwards and you check your answer, then you know what you're doing, you know? And mm-hmm. he kind of had this process they would go through. But a really neat math project we did is, and I would like to share this sometime online, is we created houses. So we think we were doing square feet and square feet. You know, yes. Yeah. And so we got graph paper and the kids were creating rooms and they were designing this house, you know, crazy things like swimming pools upstairs and yeah, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, doing all this stuff, but we did writing about it too. So we would say like, I chose this because, or verbally, or we are labeling things, you know, and then with like, this is a secret passage that goes to here. So you could do this from here to there, you know? Mm-hmm. So that way the project suddenly had meaning to them.
Right. You were connecting. That's what I loved about unit studies. When we did them, we were connecting all of these different forms of learning together and they weren't segmented so that children understood that writing and history and math and, you know, and science and all these things that's what life's about. You know, this is what learning really is. And it's not something you leave after you're finished with school and you stop learning, you learn all of your life. And it's the greatest thing that we can give to our kids is that foundation that learning is so much.
And I used to just get a workbook for health because I was like, oh, I cannot do it. I'm exhausted. I can't do everything right. And, you know, my kids like hated it. They would always say, yeah, what's one subject you don't like? Health. Well, because we were just like filling in the blank, you know, so I could say, yeah. And one time, you know, I decided, hey, let's do this whole sex ed thing with this cool comic book I found. Well, of course, that was interesting. And then we did like all these first aid things through the Y, and we did, you know, a CPR class and all these various things. And they were like, you know, that was our best health year yet. Well, of course it was. It had meaning, right?
Exactly. Well, I am so sorry. Our time has come to an end. We've filled an hour, and we probably could talk for many more.
Yeah, it's so nice to meet you, Peggy. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. You too. Also, I just wanted to let you know, probably because the comment didn't come up here, but Claire added that the keyboarding book you were searching for earlier is called Dr. Fry's Computer Keyboarding. So
it's inexpensive and you won't be wowed by it, but it does the job, you know,
exactly.
It doesn't look like much.
Yeah. You almost want the pages not to be that exciting because you want your kids to be looking at the letters they're typing.
Yeah. Because what you want to get to is the typing that they get to do someday after they get those foundational skills out of
exactly.
the way.
Exactly. So. They have to be able to read their own handwritten notes like I was doing the other day and transfer them onto the computer and type them as quick as possible.
Right.
So great. Well, thank you again so much, Rita. And for everybody that's watching, definitely check out Rita's website. It's called rootedinlanguage.com. And you have podcasts on there. You have blogs that you've written. And there's a whole page about all the classes that you have for parents.
Right. And we do have a class coming up called Supportive Writing and Editing, where we will be talking about some of these links between how we kind of try to get conversational writing and make these links. So that's coming up, awesome. I think, in October. So feel free to look at that.
Yeah. And I wish I could share that, but again, that's not working on my computer either. So
well, Claire can put it up there.
At least we didn't lose you. That's last week.
In that technology
yes.
problem.
Exactly. So I just want to thank all of you for joining us live on our Facebook Live. Next week, we have Kathy Kuhl will be joining us, and she's going to be talking about raising never give up kids. And just so you know, if you normally join us at this 8 o'clock time frame, Central Standard Time, we'll be moving it up to 6:30 because she's on the East Coast and we want to make sure that she gets to bed at a decent time. So 6:30 next week. And we'll see you here. But this broadcast is funded in part by the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America and also by viewers like you. Feel free to check out our website. That's bedhomeschool.com. And you can always donate to our nonprofit and support our outreach just by clicking on our donate button. So thank you very much. And we'll keep the conversation going in the SPED Homeschool Support Group and on Facebook and also on our website. And until then, we'll see you on there, and then we'll see you here next week. Thanks. Bye.